CliffCentral.com.
All right. Just before we get to Sam, a few things in the comments. I don't want anyone to think I'm ignoring them. Boiled Prawn Shack says, my aim was to be married with kids by the time I was 30. Well, I'm 39, and none of that has happened.
Lucky you.
Well, some people are very happy that they had kids. Martel says, you remind me of classmates that I'd only see during semester tests and exams. I also studied at UP, and I remember that news cafe. Oh, yeah. Hell, yeah. Moonchild wants to know, what happened to your friend Charles? What's he doing now? Running a multi-million-dollar business, or is he on the street? Well, actually, he has the highest IQ of anyone I've ever met. And we both went and did our tests together, and he came out with, like, some incredible, unbelievable number. And they actually did the test again with a different IQ test, and he came out with, again, the highest score they'd ever measured. He's one of the smartest people I know. And he's actually living in Dallas now, but he's worked for all the big consulting firms. I think he's working for a new business at the moment, but it's like a transnational North American thing. He's incredibly clever and very successful. So any time spent with him was worth it compared to like boring, dreary law lectures. Anyway, we got a much more important thing to do this morning, and that is to be joined again by the terrific Sam Cowan, who's actually in the studio. Listen, isn't it ironic? You're in the studio, and I'm at home, and Leanne's at home. It's like you're the only one who's actually working, Sam.
Because at my age, it's easier for me to get in my car and drive 4.5 minutes to the studio than to spend half an hour working on our stream.
That's about right. So the last time we had Sam on was to talk about one of her best-selling books. She wrote the Parktown Boys tragedy called Brutal School Ties. And we talked about that. What a terrible, terrible story that was. But something that needed to be told. Have there been any follow-ups, by the way? Because that was riveting stuff.
So the hostel is now back under the auspices of the school, which is very bad news. Nothing's changed at Parktown Boys.
Oh,
nothing's
really?
Changed at Parktown Boys. So, but things have changed in other schools. People are having more accommodations now, and that I think is what needs to happen. And people are talking to their kids more. So when they come home bruised with no underpants, or come home with none of their clothes and just exhausted and tearful, they're asking them what is going on. It's this code of silence can't continue.
Wow. Unbelievable that's – it's just – some stuff just gets brushed under the carpet, huh? It's like certain things are just not the outrageous things that people think they would be. Unreal.
No. So a mate of mine, Dion Wiggett, who wrote My Only Story.
Yes.
His books have definitely forced some incredible prosecutions. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be a lot more in the pipeline. So stuff he has done, there's been real action taken.
Well, Dion Wiggett.
Schools are still a place of silence.
I got to say, Dion Wiggett, since you bring him up, has an incredible podcast series too, which has won awards.
Yes.
It's absolutely terrific. And again, just illustrates the power of his stories, but also how useful it is to be able to convert these things into podcasts. Really good work. Mm. And you and Dion Wiggett are actually very – you're good friends, and you spend an enormous amount of time doing jigsaw puzzles, which is the most most dreary thing I've ever heard in my life. Jigsaw puzzles.
Oh, no. Leanne, you don't know how to go about it.
Listen, apparently they want to change
your – jigsaw puzzles are
– they're telling me they want to change your mic.
They want to change what?
Your mic.
Oh. Oh, that's why she keeps coming in. She's so lovely.
Who's Simpiwe?
Come along. She's waving a mic, and then two books arrived on the table.
Oh, okay. Well, while they're busy fiddling with your mic, Leanne and I will just chat amongst ourselves. Let me remind everybody that Sam is now a consciousness and a recovery coach, which we'll talk about in a second. Also a motivational speaker, a radio and TV presenter, obviously. I mean, radio and TV presenter. We say that like it's a throwaway thing at the end of her bio, but she has been part of arguably one of the most successful radio shows in South African history, along with a man called Jeremy Mansfield, who I had the pleasure of spending the afternoon with yesterday. Sam invited a few people. Apparently, Jeremy drew up this list of people he wanted to see. or people he didn't want to see. I think you gave him.
Yeah, I was going to say more like
Sam gave him a list. Sam gave him a list, and then he literally ticked off some people and crossed off others. So we'll get to that. We'll get to that in a second, because it was a very happy afternoon spent mostly reminiscing over all kinds of funny and ridiculous stuff that we've done in our careers. And she's written, apart from her book Brutal School Ties, which we touched on just a moment ago. Well, I think with that book, touched on is probably the worst possible way to refer to it. She's also written a brilliant book called From Whiskey to Water, which is the story of her own battle with alcohol addiction. I had a drink with Aki Anastasio yesterday, and I tried very hard to get Sam to have one, and she just wasn't having any of it. So she's absolutely on the path. She's sticking to it. She's not going backwards. She's not relapsing. In fact, I think part of her coaching is probably helping other people to stay that course, which is extraordinary. So, are you back on the mic? Let's just see. I think you're on mute now. Let me unmute you here. Oh, yeah. You've got to unmute yourself. See, technology is still your problem.
Yeah, you.
Yeah, just turn on the...
Oh,
there we go.
There we go.
All right, sorry, because you were busy reacting, and it was all facial features and expressions, and none of the... Now we can
hear
you.
Great on radio. Great on podcast.
Yeah, yes. Great on podcast. All right, so Sam, just tell us quickly, because I said a lot there. First of all, your coaching, how does that all work?
So coaching is about moving people forward. So you can go to see a psychologist, and a lot of us have, and some mm-hmm. of us should some more, and that'll tell you how you got to where you are now. But coaching is to move you forward. Mm-hmm. So it's about saying, well, what do you want? And people say, oh, well, this happened to me and that happened to me. And I go, yeah, and it's awful, but what do you want now? So it's about saying to people, look forward.
Right.
And so often you'll hear people say, oh, you know, I can't say no, or I never meet the right man, or I never have any money, or I've given up on life and nothing good ever happens to me. And it's like, well, what are you doing to make something good happen for you?
I hope you're charging a lot of money for this, because to hear other people's fucking problems all day would drive me up the wall.
Do you know what? It's actually fantastic. It's fantastic because it's different all the time. And people have to come up with commitments at the end of each session to give themselves assignments to stick to the promises they've made to themselves, right? Mm-hmm. So I can say this, I can tell this story because of where we are. I had one client who had been going through a dreadful time. He had terrible grief, lost both his parents in a horrific way. And he'd really felt very lost and very sad. And he'd gone into quite a drug spiral. And I said to him, well, what makes you happy? What sort of things did you do before this to make you happy? And he said, well, he said, I used to masturbate a lot more.
Cool.
Well, so I said, okay. Well, what's stopping you now? I mean, obviously not now. So he said, actually nothing. So some people's assignments are, I'm going to walk around the block twice.
What was his assignment?
His assignment was to masturbate whenever he felt like it, at least twice a week.
Can I tell you something?
He gave himself the assignment. I didn't write it up.
I think this is amazing, because you see, a lot of people don't need a psychologist or a psychiatrist, and they don't necessarily need a fitness coach or any of that stuff. They need a life coach. They need someone who can help them with, and you've got this vast experience. I mean, you're a mom of two kids who are so grown up now, it makes me feel old. No. You've stayed in a happy marriage, which is in this day and age an enormous achievement, with the same man for your entire life, which is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. You've had a varied and interesting career where you've met all kinds of incredible people. And I want to just quickly get to the Jeremy part of the story here, because mm-hmm. I was really moved by a little get together you arranged yesterday afternoon. And we know that you know, he's got limited time. He's stage mm-hmm. four. There is no stage five. He's an incredibly talented, brilliant human being who I think many South Africans have over the years looked to for, you know, a laugh, a smile, a cry, even an incredible guy, a really, really incredible guy. And someone who I think if we could all donate, you know, 5 minutes of our lives to him, everyone would, if you could crowdfund time, and he would probably live forever. But it's an incredibly difficult thing to go through. And he's just handling with such aplomb. And, mm-hmm. and I mean, I know you are a big part of this and you'd never talk about yourself, but you've been more than a friend in all of this. You've been there every step of the way. And I know he has other people who care about him tremendously, mm-hmm. but you're helping him kind of, do the most elegant and graceful and positive exit it is possible to do. It's actually lovely to be a part of this, Sam.
So, you know, we've worked together for 27 years and we've been friends for a great deal of that. And when you're on the radio and you're doing a successful show, and you're right, it was cutting edge, as was yours. And you don't enjoy it. I mean, you do, but you're always looking forward. You're always waiting for the next ratings, right? Yeah. And it took us a while after he had left Prime Media for us to reconnect and go, we actually like each other. It's not just on-air chemistry. We actually like each other. And so we started socializing. And it was funny because people would see us in restaurants and we'd go straight back into our old kind of, you know, on-air chemistry. And they'd think we were having a fight, but actually it was just how it was. And so I was still working with him a little on his YouTube channel, and then he got sick and we had a conversation about it. And I said, what do you want to do? What do you want to do now? And he said, Sam, I've got to get my affairs in order and then I want to follow the sun. He said, wherever the sun is, I want to follow it. And he said, will you help me? And I said, absolutely. We will find that sun. Sure. And you were all dreadful, by the way. Leanne, you don't know this, but when they arrived and he said, there's four things I want you to know. The first thing is there's a list. And Sam gave it to me, as you said, Gareth. And I've ticked off the people I want to see. And there's a lot more that I, you know, on the, and all of these guys as one go, who's on, not on the list?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, no, you don't get to know that.
Yeah.
You made the cut. And also you guys are really, what's difficult is having to give people the restrictions because obviously he is frail. So I have to say to people, this is when you can come and see him. Mm. And there's a possibility that with even an hour to go, I'm going to have to cancel it if he's not well. Mm. But I see how he responds to talking about the past in a really good, nostalgic way. And I think, when you're going so fast in your career, literally, and I've said this to you before, Gareth, when you're going 200 k's an hour in a Ferrari with no rearview mirror, you don't get to take that time to go, wow, let's look at what we did and look at the fun we had. And that's come back. And I think if there's anything, if I can give anything, it's to create gatherings where those memories can come up and we are all laughing. I mean, he told a dirty joke yesterday. Gareth, that is the first time he has told a dirty joke in months. I like to.
You're such a good influence, Gareth. Always.
There I am, spending a few precious moments with someone, and what do we waste our time on filthy jokes? It's outrageous.
Absolute filth.
And I'll tell you what else Gareth did. So at the beginning, Jeremy was quite emotional. He said, "I need to tell you guys some things, and you need to listen." So everyone leans in, and he says, first of all, this is stage four. This is it. I don't know how much time I've got left, but I know it's not much." And everyone kind of nods solemnly, and he goes, "Secondly, there are only certain people I wanted to see, and thank you so much for coming along and, you know, for Sam for arranging." And so we all nodded our heads again. Mm. And he said, "Thirdly, I want to tell you about immunology. And so he told us all about that. And Gareth goes, "Oh, thank God," he says. "I thought you were going to ask us for money."
He loved that, though. He laughed. He laughed his ass.
That is the tone. You know, that's the kind of thing we would always say to each other.
I said, well, obviously I didn't really, but it was hilarious. So I said,
"It was so funny.
I'm so relieved. I left my wallet in the car just in case."
But that's the atmosphere in which we all worked, right?
Right.
Where we said those things. We were horrific, but it worked for us. And that nostalgia just carried through.
Well, someone says they're a proud owner of Jeremy's book, Frot Jokes. Listen, I remembered so many things yesterday that made me very nostalgic, and I see lots of people in the comments doing the same thing. We brought up that Give Him Another Chance song, which was one of the most hilarious things. I told Jeremy, though, that it was someone who's 19 who couldn't possibly have listened to the show as an adult, remembered the song from someone else, so it's been like broken telephone down, and he was singing Give Him Another Chance, which was hilarious because that was such a thing that you guys started. Beautiful. You know, someone even said that yesterday, which is like a piece of language that was contributed to the South African dictionary by your show. And there's so many things, whether it's his characters that he used to do, like I mentioned Professor Wim Beukes.
Oh, my word.
Or, you know, Fricky Heiser, or any of these other people who were his. He had, and Simpiwe, obviously. You know, there were so many brilliant, brilliant things that happened then. Obviously, it was at a time, and this is the funny thing, is you can never recreate those things because they happen in their context. And it's a beautiful thing to be able to say that you lived in the era of that sort of radio.
So the great talent of Jeremy, I think his greatest talent is creating that theater of the mind. When he created a character, he was in that character. So we obviously didn't do what you can do now. People can actually watch the show from their computers or their phones or whatever. But I would see Jeremy go into the character. Wim Beerkes had mannerisms, and Sid Peewee had different mannerisms, and Frikkie Kaiser had different mannerisms.
And
he got so involved that once we made the mistake once, we never did it again. A sponsor wanted to sponsor Wim Beerkes' recipe section. So we sold it for vast quantities of money. But we had to do recipes that all involved chicken. And, you know, you can tell a few jokes about chicken, but ultimately chicken is the most boring meat there is. You only put it in a dish so you can flavor it with something else.
Exactly.
And that is true. Have you ever had chicken that isn't lemon and herb?
Cayenne
pepper.
Yeah.
Basted with barbecues, anything. Anyway, so at the end, Jeremy and I sat down, and he's like, Sam, I can't do this anymore. And I said, there's only one thing we can do. And he said, what is it? I said, we have to kill him. So we did.
You killed him.
So we go on air and we say we said he's passed away, and it's very sad. And Jeremy started to cry, and we were like, such a wonderful person, and I started to cry, and we mourned this imaginary person on and we meant it, like to us.
And
we had tears.
So yesterday, you know, someone said that there was a plane. There was one of those planes with a banner on it, flying over Joburg at some point with "Rest in Peace, Wim Beerkes" written. On a banner. I mean, this is phenomenal. This is a person who never existed, and there was an airplane in the sky with a banner that said, "Rest in peace, Professor Wim Beerkes." I mean, that's amazing.
But we cried. That's how into the characters we were. I mean, we told a story once. So 702, I think you were doing the breakfast show at the time,
yes.
And you guys had just got a new OB vehicle, outside broadcast vehicle. And,
right.
And we were so cross because we were making a lot more money than you, and we had this old thing, the headphones were broken, and you had to like wedge your chair against the desk because the floor was uneven.
Yeah.
And we're like, how come they're getting one? So we lied. We went on air and we said, no, we've got a new OB vehicle. Because 702 was doing like the whole day from the OB vehicle. And you're like, right, we'll do our day too. So we told everyone we're in this OB vehicle, right? And we're on the highways and byways. Does anyone even say that anymore?
Sure.
And if you wave at us or hoot at us, we'll throw you a t-shirt. Now, we were in the studio the whole time, but people were phoning in going, guys, I'm driving next to you, I'm waving. And Jeremy stopped waving. He's like, I'm waving back at you. Sam, throw him a t-shirt. And I find myself picking up this imaginary t-shirt, throwing it out the window. The guy goes,
God.
I got it. Thanks so much. No one knew.
That's so great.
And it wasn't a setup. People actually just bought in.
That is so great. Silver Nell says, I grew up listening to Sam and Jeremy. You guys have a special place in my heart.
Oh.
So, okay, so give us the lowdown here. How is he doing? Because I can always give this third-hand information, but you actually see him all the time.
So, on a physical level, he's taking a lot of strain. So, as you know, he's got stage 4 liver cancer,
mm-hmm.
And it's affected a lot of his faculties. It makes him very vulnerable to getting sick because his liver is so compromised from the cancer.
Sure.
And so you and I might get a cold and take some Carenza C and complain to everyone we know. A cold for him is life-threatening.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So he knows that, and that's an added burden. You know, having cancer is one thing, but to find out, you know, you could basically pop off with a bladder infection. I mean, who wants
and
to
yet,
go that way?
And yet, you invited Alan Ford yesterday. I mean, that's such a health risk.
Oh, stop it. Stop it. And so he is frail. He gets very, very tired, and he's on a lot of morphine.
Mm.
And you guys talking about how he could possibly start dealing that was just hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
Listen, the police are listening to this.
Yeah, I mean, you said he's got a big bottle of morphine, and he gets to
it's like a liter.
Yes, that sounds nice.
Well, he doesn't swig morphine.
He doesn't swig it. He has to have it, you know, his partner, Karen, who's an angel, she like doles it out. She's the handler. But some days he has really bad days.
Some days, I'm sure.
I mean, his mum died on his actual birthday, and that affected him for the entire week.
So,
he was just
broken. Alan told me that the other day, and I almost thought, no, this is almost like one of those books where you're reading it and you think, no, this is a step too far. It's just too awful to comprehend because his mother, I mean, you know, to go through this treatment, to go through this kind of health thing. And he said something interesting. He said a lot of interesting things yesterday. And I mentioned earlier on the show, which I'm not going to repeat, that he, you know, he said you've got maybe a couple of summers that you have to figure out what you're going to do in a couple of winters, and you must do what you can in that time, which I thought was really valuable. But to hear about his mom, too, I mean, that's just absolutely awful. How did he deal with that?
Gareth,
how did you deal with that?
He's lost, in the past 18 months, he's lost both his brothers and his mother.
Oh, no.
What? His eldest brother, who's quite a lot older than him, he was in his 70s. He's been sick for a long time. But his younger brother, Stephen, was diagnosed with cancer in January and died very soon afterwards. So this man has gone through an immense amount of emotional anguish. Mm. And with the cancer, he's been, you know, we joke about it because you have to. So I went away down to Cape Town, and he'd been quite sick. And I said to him, listen, I said, can you just be a team player in this relationship and put me first and not die while I'm away? I said, because honestly, it's going to mess up my entire holiday. It's the first time our family's gone away for more than 4 days in a decade. Yeah. Can you just be a bit of a team player? And people who don't know us were just looking at me like, how can you talk to him like that?
Of course.
And so he's like, you know, you're being very selfish. What if I feel like it? I was like, no, just be a team player. And it's nice because he's like, okay. So what date can I go? I said, well, you can't go on the 28th because that's when I get back. And the 29th, my daughter is going to camp on the 30th, so I have to do a lot of shopping. So after the 31st, if you could just let me know how you're feeling. And that's how he deals with it. That is how he deals with it, is to laugh and to keep chasing the time, you know, to keep chasing the sun, to take those moments to say, listen, I do feel awful, but I want to see people.
Well, I mean, he's, you know, you can't, there's this, ironically, a radio jingle I used to have. It went, I got something to say. It's better to burn out than to fade away, which I always thought was like a good motto generally. And, you know, he's lived this incredible life. I mean, we're talking about him in the past tense, which is revolting. But, you know, he has had, like, he's traveled to all six continents. He's met everyone you could possibly wish to meet, including, you know, being adopted by Nelson Mandela as his white son. I mean, there's so many fun stories and great experiences in that life that if he lived, you know, if most people lived 10 lifetimes, they wouldn't have those experiences. So there's something in that,
And
too.
What people forget as well is he created employment. Like, this man came onto the scene, and I was talking to Darren Simpson about it, and he said, you know what? He said to Jim, he said, we were in the league. He said, and sometimes we even topped the league. He said, but Jim, you were the league. And he was right. He did things that no one had done, and he made jokes. That, I mean, I can see on the comments here from Boiled Prawn Shark, Jack.
Yeah.
Says, I remember being in the car on my way to school when it was announced Hay Corston committed suicide, and Jeremy said someone had to. And I was so scared. So he did that. I ran out the studio. We got a broadcast complaints commission. But people remember that. And that was at a time where he just did whatever he wanted to do. And so he has. He's lived his life, you know, and people forget how much money he created.
Yeah.
I mean, Robin Walsh, who was big at the time, wrote a song, Viva the Fat Man, Pay Him What He Wants.
Yes, I remember that. when his contract negotiations came around. Yes.
Oh, my word. Those were hilarious. Those were hilarious. He used to do it on air.
Yeah.
He used to do it on air. He used to say to people, phone in and say what I should earn. You should have seen the numbers. I was like,
Seamus.
He's powered a small country for several years.
Seamus McGeegan, I mean, if that isn't Irish, I don't know what is. He says, people actually rocked up at the Duck and Trot in Dulstrom believing he was broadcasting live from there when he wasn't.
Yes! Do you know, he once sold a broadcast in France, and we went in France. We got 500,000 rand out of one of the major banks in 1997.
That's amazing.
So about a bazillion rand now. We were in the studio, and we had sound playing of that French kind of accordion music and a bicycle. That was our entire sound bank. It was a bicycle and some French music. And we were all broadcasting from a French pub. And we didn't know what the French was for pub, so we kept saying, it's a bistro, it's a cafe, it's a French, it's a patisserie. And it was so realistic that I actually got flu that week, and I went to the doctor and I got a script, and I went through to the pharmacy, and they said, you can't fill scripts for other people, because in those days you couldn't. And I said, it's me. And she goes, no, Sam Cowan's in France.
That's hilarious. Jesus, that's great. Oh,
that's what he was capable of. He was magic.
All right. So, I mean, it's cool.
Still is magic.
It's cool that he's doing these little things where he's seeing people and seeing them. Well, you know, there's nothing worse than kind of this dreary, sad, depressing thing where people are sitting in a chair and they're you know, in a home and, you know, people are coming to see them and it's all miserable and sad and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. So you're coordinating all of that. Is there a lot of pressure from people who, you know, I mean, he's only got a certain amount of energy in a day. Are you like the gatekeeper? I joked yesterday, you're like Zelda Lachrunzi with Madiba, you know, you have to kind of chase people away.
So about a month ago, he sat with the doctors and they said, right, this is where you are now. And it was not a pleasant conversation. And he didn't want to see anyone. You know, he knows how different he looks and he knows that he gets confused and he knows how different he sounds. And that's the painkillers. And he knows how much weight he's lost. He knows. He's not a stupid man. And he didn't want to see anyone. He didn't want anyone to see him like that. So I was phoning people who wanted to go around and visit going, you know what, he's too ill. And he really was. I mean, I think it would have finished him. And then suddenly he did an about turn and he said, you know what? He said, I actually do want to see people. He said, they must just see me as I am. And I said, yes. I said, because people love you and they do want to see you as you are. And not everyone's there for the show. As in, if he's quiet, I mean, we saw some of his friends the other day, slept through the entire thing. But he would wake up every now and again and we said to him, do you want to go home? And he was like, no. And he'd ask a question, he'd answer it. But that's how it is, you know. And I said to him, let's treat this as though it's Mundar. And let's rack him and stack him.
Well, because you never know. I mean,
and I said, but you can't turn around to me after I've organized and go, actually, I've changed my mind on that person.
Yeah.
Because I can't keep telling people
right.
that you're just too sick that
no,
day.
So people's
noses are out of joint, and I get that, and I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm not apologizing.
No.
I'm regretful of people.
I was glad to hear from him yesterday because, you know, I think Aki was talking about, like, some of the people who we've worked with that we didn't think were particularly pleasant. And I said to him, what matters? Like, what matters? And he took a long, long time to think about it. And then he said, you've got to look after yourself, too. You've got to make some time for you. You see, he spent a lot of his life worrying about other people, helping people. You know, that make-a-wish thing that you guys used to do, which was like the tearjerker of all tearjerkers, long before it became this twee thing that it is now, where you have, you know, assholes on social media pretending to care about people. You guys actually helped a great number of people in that respect. As you say, created employment, made people laugh, improved people's day on a daily basis just by giving them something to smile about. And obviously all the people that he actually helped in his real life too. And probably didn't save a whole lot of time to think about himself. And he said, you got to do that. You've got to actually save a little bit of energy and time for yourself, which is not a bad thing because people say, oh no, that's selfish. You shouldn't do that. I mean, you as a life coach probably give people this advice all the time. They don't spend any time actually thinking about what matters to them and doing it.
So I always say to people, what do you think your best quality is? And 9 times out of 10, specifically with women, men will go, oh, I'm clever or I'm this or I'm that. Women will go, I'm a very giving person.
Yeah.
I'm a very kind person. I go, okay, and what else? I'm always there for others. Okay, and what else? No, I'm very loyal. I go, okay, I asked you what your best quality was, not a golden retriever. And so many people look at me. I mean, one woman bursts into tears. She goes, that's all I am. I said, I don't believe that's all you are. And to get people to remember stuff. I mean, I had one lady, amazing lady. She'd come out of a terrible divorce. And as is often the case, her husband's life had gone substantially better than hers.
Yeah.
And she'd had to move from a house with a beautiful garden. She loved her garden. To a flat. And she said, I just missed my plants so badly. I said, okay, so what do you choose? She goes, well, I can't do anything in the flat. I said, you've heard of house plants, hey?
Mm-hmm.
And she said, it's not the same. I said, no, it's not. So what could you do about that? Anyway, she left. She goes, I'm going to think about the house plants. I said, fantastic. She phoned me the next night. She said, Sam, I'm going to sleep in my garden. And she sent me a picture. And she'd gone and bought shells. And every house plant you can imagine. I mean,
wow.
Reasons to be a bad mother. Like, what am I going to kill today? And she had created this little garden in her bedroom. And it was a huge mind shift for her. I'm going to sleep in my garden. And that's the thing. It's when you're feeling so down and so sad, and suddenly you go, hang on a minute. And if it's anything, so what does a life coach do? You change your life. I can't change your life for you. And I'm not going to try. I'm not giving you homework. You must do your own homework. Yeah. If you don't do it, then don't do it. It's not going to change my life. But what I will show you is where the light switches. And it's up to you if you choose to walk towards it.
So
turn on your own
light. The real reason I brought you on, Sam, was just so that you could coach Leanne so that I ever get cancer. That she...
What happened? Listen, Gareth, I really admire your relationship with Jeremy and where you are now. It's a special time. It really is. But I do know that Gareth would not provide the same for me.
You know, you say that. So when you're working on a breakfast show, you've got two, and you know this. I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but maybe the listeners don't know how much is about raising money. Not even for charity. Like, it is delivering prospects to advertisers.
Yeah.
We didn't go on in the morning. I mean, look, we shot the breeze, but there was a strategy. There was a bigger strategy. Because you have to bring that money in or you're not on air. And when those ratings come in, you live and die on them. We worked on the trend. So it wasn't like one bad book and we were all on the line. But you work on a trend. And to be able to be funny and make it sound like you've literally just come to work, scratched your balls, had a fart, and carried on while you're still making millions and hundreds of millions of rand. Is no easy feat. And so a lot of times there was conflict in the team, and I'll be open about that. Mm. And it was only later when you look at it and go, actually, we had some really good times. I mean, I remember Harry saying we laughed. Oh, how we laughed. And it's afterwards you look at each other and say, actually, friendship is born in that moment, C.S. Lewis says, when one person looks at another and says, you too, I thought I was the only one. And so you'll find this person at the bookshelf will be there for you. He will. You will, Gareth.
Yeah, all right.
Because I know.
Okay.
Well, only if you know Leanne is there to wheel me around. Will I, you know, she must guarantee that now, though.
You know, it's going to be the other way around. You know. Don't lie. You've already written me off, saying that if a burglar had to break into my house, he'd think, oh, shame, her with her sleeping Jesus and her sleep apnea and all her medications beside the bed and the four cats on the duvet. Just shame. Just leave her alone.
I think that sounds delightful, actually.
Love my life.
Oh, well, come on. So here are some fun comments from people. First of all, what a great show today, says Sean. Thanks for sharing, and so great to see you again, Sam. You brought back many good memories from my childhood on the way to school. Thank you. That stuff matters, hey? Cunning Stunt says, my first job was at Mansfield's in Ilovo. I was a shooter girl, like in Coyote Ugly. We coined it.
Oh, wow.
We coined it, and Jeremy was awesome when he came in. You know, that's so good to hear, because you hear so many people bitching about, oh, I had a waitress job, and the people were so sexist and blah, blah, blah. So it's nice to hear that. Thank you, Cunning Stunt. But I'm gathering from your name, you're not a particularly sensitive person. All right, and then...
Hello, Alice.
Hello, this is Alice. Say hello to Alice, everybody.
Oh!
Little Alice. She turned... Alice, she
like,
turned,
I just care about you, Gareth.
Yeah, she turned 7 months yesterday, so she's getting big.
Getting so big.
Yeah. It is such a privilege to be there for someone at the end, says Tracy. Ricky Gervais's Afterlife on Netflix is such a beautiful and yet such a funny show.
Yeah.
Except that Aki suggested it as viewing yesterday, and you and I both climbed into him and said, must you be so depressed?
Yes, they've got lots of shows about people wanting to die.
Yeah.
I mean, when we're dying.
Yeah, right.
No.
Right. Lighthouse Barber says, because this is the kind of cheap person that he is, I have photostats of Jeremy's recipe book from the Central Library in Cape Town.
You know, I looked at the word photostats and I had to think, what is that? Photostats.
I know.
Okay, I'm older than both of you. Who remembers microfish?
No.
Exactly. Microfish. Only me. Mm-mm. Microfish. You would go to the library and they'd give you these transparencies and you'd go onto this computer and it was a big knob.
Jesus.
I just could have likened that to somebody else. Yes. But the big norm, and you kind of looked around. If you ever watched procedural criminal dramas from the 80s and 90s, they used a microfish.
Wow.
Yes, I do remember now.
There you go. You've got to be nearly 50, though, to remember that. It's a privilege.
Look at this. When are you two going to get your horn-rimmed glasses and go off to the library together?
No, I have already got glasses, and I have turned into my mother. I walk around the house looking for the glasses that are on my head. And the other day, I had my cell phone with me, and I was phoning my phone to see where my phone was. And my daughter looked at me, she goes, it's in your hand.
Yeah.
But I'm a safety officer. We talk about the magnificence of radio in the days that we did it.
Sure.
My daughter is 15, so of course everything I do is extra. For the whole of COVID, I was extra. I thought it was a compliment. So Bobby, so extra. I was like, oh, thanks. I'm extra this, extra. Anyway, it doesn't mean that. But she said to me, she goes, wow, Mom. She goes, you were really famous. I said, I was, yes. She goes, I just thought what you did was really embarrassing.
Exactly. Oh, no. No, exactly.
Thank you. Thank you for that.
Yeah, I often think about that because, you know, I was talking to a relative the other day, and I said to her, you know, your mum's fabulous because her mum is just this most eccentric woman. You can't believe the things she says. She's outrageous, and she's always been, like, a very, very funny person. She's always been hilariously out of, you know, she if everyone else is well-behaved, she behaves badly, that kind of person. And I said, you know, she's always been so entertaining, and she said, yes, but, you know, it's entertaining for other people, but not when she's your mum. You know, painting her hubcaps pink and that kind of thing is not really, that's not great when you're a kid at school just trying to fit in. And I'm sure that that's probably a similar situation for your daughter. Your son is already studying he's at UCT. I mean, that makes me feel so old.
He's at UCT, 6'1".
He was a kid.
Hmm?
He was a little baby when I mean.
He was a baby. Yeah. He toddled into the studio. You met him. I think you saw Jen when she was a baby.
Yeah.
And they're both their own people. They're marvelous. Other moms of the same era will say to me, don't you wish they were babies again? I go, no, I hated that. I hated not being able to talk to them because for me, I'm a very verbal person. My husband was amazing. It's hungry. It's tired. It's cold. I'm like, what do you want? What do you want? And as they get older and they can talk to you, they get so interesting and it's marvelous. Like, you know, you're navigating some difficult ground at the moment in terms of what's important to them and what we look at and go, well, that's a load of rubbish. But actually, I've always remind myself when I think I don't understand that we campaigned against apartheid and for gay rights. And all our parents thought that was ridiculous too. And it really wasn't. And so you don't know what's going to last and what isn't.
Right.
Yeah. But kids are smart and they think things through. And I really do think the next generation is going to all put us in a home and make sure that there's no plastic in the world. They're determined to get saved.
Listen, I'll tell you what, when our generation does end up in like old age homes, it's going to be dangerous. That's very dangerous. So a couple of people, look, you two have started a whole thing now with Tracy says, do you remember a telex machine?
Oh, we had a telex machine in the newsroom.
Did you?
We did. And you would go to the telex machine and the South African Weather Bureau would send through the weather on the telex machine. I am so old, Gareth, that when the internet first sort of arrived, we had one computer in the newsroom, and all of us thought that was the internet. We thought that was the internet. So you couldn't get the internet anywhere else. And somebody would come and go, where is the internet? It's in the corner there.
That machine. So
I remember in the newsroom that my computer was the only one that got Word for the first time.
Oh, I mean, we were writing news scripts. On what? This weird sort of DOS X or whatever they were called program.
Jeez, you guys
is it a news bulletin or a project? I don't know.
This show is brought to you by very old machines that no one buys anymore. I mean, here's someone saying that they had an overhead projector that looked like a giant X-ray machine. I mean, kids don't have overhead projectors anymore. Now they've got whiteboards and the teacher's got like an iPad. And
Wait. So I was discriminated against.
Oh.
Because of the overhead projector. Because I'm left-handed. So when you write slides, when we used to do projects, because now that these kids do PowerPoint, and in fact, that's old. They do Google Classroom, and they do all these things that I could never have done. But we had to write our own transparencies. Now, you try writing with a Cokie pen when you're left-handed. You just get it looks like a Rorschach drawing. So I had to pay people, like, at least 20 cents to do
Oh, my God.
Discrimination against left-handed people.
MS-DOS.
My kids discovered my Sony Walkman the other day. They were fascinated and confused at the same time. No Bluetooth? Yeah.
Where does it draw its information from?
Dr. Robin says,
how does it know what to do?
Dr. Robin says, fuck it, I remember those damn microfiche machines. They always had a weird smell about them too, like dead moths and dust.
Yeah.
Amazing.
It did.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And sadness.
Yeah. Sad. MS-DOS. Like
old stage curtains at school that were folded that had never seen water in their lives.
Never.
If you unfurled them, a moth would fall out of them, yeah.
Only the one. You were at a better school than me.
Well, Sharon says, it reminds me of that episode of The It Crowd where they convince Jen that the internet is in a box. Okay. I don't even know what The It Crowd is, so that's how old I am. All right, let's stop this. This is quite enough nostalgia for one morning.
Madness.
So, Sam, I will see you soon, and lots of love. And I'm sure there are loads and loads of people who will echo this when I say give lots of our love to Jeremy. And we'll catch up again. Are you writing another best-selling book anytime soon?
I am writing about the last 20 years of sobriety, and it's going to be called Sober Forest.
Oh.
No.
Oh, my God.
And it comes from the fact that I have a client who goes, I hate AA because it reminds me of pagans dancing around in Sober Forest. I thought, oh, my word, that's exactly what it is. It's pagans dancing around in Sober Forest.
Oh, no.
So it's very funny. It's very funny.
Well, I mean, we've got to have
we
have to have a conversation about that one day, because living in South Africa and not drinking means you really don't know how to socialize. It must have
not only South Africa, but Joburg.
Yeah.
The Cape Townians get away with it because they live with wine. So it's almost, if you move to Cape Town, you have to drink wine. It's actually a prerequisite. And and you have to start arriving late for everything. But I will leave you with this. During lockdown, when booze and smokes were banned, and Jeremy and I were still on air, we were looking at each other one day and we were saying, nobody's complaining that they can't get the booze because they're dying for a drink. And nobody wants to think about the fact that maybe that alcohol is a lot more necessary than it was. So they were saying, you know what, the tax revenue, what we are losing.
Such a lot of shit.
Who is drinking and smoking for their country?
Yeah, no one. No one.
But feel free.
Yeah. Listen, Sam, lovely to have you on. And I hope we'll see you again very, very soon. Lots of great comments here. People just love hearing from you and seeing you. And and keep up the good work and keep up with all the stuff that you're doing with Jeremy. I think it not only matters enormously to him, but to all of us too. And it's just a great thing to see. Like, this is real. This is love and friendship at the level that we should all aspire to.
And if anything, you're making Gareth feel guilty about what he's not going to do for me one day.
Oh, sorry, Leanne, are you still alive? Thanks, Sam. Cheers. Cheers, bye. Cheers, there's Sam Cowan, everybody. What an absolute angel. Don't worry, Ass. I'll send someone around.
It's when I first moved into where I am now, in the cottage.
Yes.
Which used to be a stable for horses. Sam and Paul, good morning. The landlords came over and said, you know, we didn't realize that you were famous.
Oh.
And I said, oh. Yes, we told our daughter who you were. And they said that you've even written books about children.
They thought you were Sam.
And I was still brand new and probably a week or two late on my rent. And I went, yes.
good for you.
Indeed.
Milk it.
So they still think that I've written books about children and coaching. And
that's great. Keep it up. You know what I'll do? I'll pop around one day and say, I'm a huge fan. I just, I brought her some chocolates or whatever.
Yeah.
All right. Here's George Meany, everybody. Exciting times it's Friday when Borge is here. And I know, Leanne, you've missed out on calling him Borge for a number of weeks. So here's your chance.
Nice. I got I think it was a week ago that we saw each other,
yes,
right?
Yes, correct. But not for a long time before then.
Yeah.
Yeah, there he is. So, George, I sent a couple of my friends around to visit you at the Festival of Motoring. Did they pop around and tell you that I'd sent them?
Not to my knowledge. I think
useless. Time for new friends.
Nobody said to me, Gareth sent me.
Time for new friends. That's what I say. All right. So George, I got to say, it was really exciting. We never know. I make a joke about this every week, but we don't actually know where we're going to see you. You sometimes in a plane, sometimes in a boat, sometimes in a car. Sometimes you're at the festival motoring. How did it go? It looked like you guys had an amazing stand there.
We had probably the busiest stand, and I think the reason was we were giving away free rides in supercars.
Awesome.
So the queue got incredibly long. We had three GTRs and two 350 Zs rotating, and one 348 Ferrari. So it was incredibly sure. exciting. There were lots of people. But, you know, some consumers lost their shit, and you know, we had to really handle that delicately because they had to wait in a queue for an hour or two. But we said to them, listen, everyone else is charging 1500 rand, 2500 rand for a ride in a supercar. We're giving it away for free. We can't control hundreds of people coming here. So
that's when you need
a little bit of a lesson.
George, that's when you need to pull out your gun and just say to them, right,
listen, people.
Yeah, shut up or I'm going to shoot you. That's what you need to do. You see, George, again, no good deed goes unpunished. Here you are giving people free rides in supercars and they complain.
Well, it was the vast minority. So, you can't kind of paint everybody with the same tarred brush. But, yeah, I guess good deed goes unpunished. There were those individuals. One gentleman and his son stood in the queue, and because the son couldn't get a ride in the Ferrari and it was only the 350Z available, chucked his pass on the floor and then stormed out.
People are so
put on your big gold panties.
All right. Oh my God. Anyway, listen, well done. I mean, you probably gave a bunch of people who've never been and will never be again in one of those cars, the ride of a lifetime. So, you know, take the good and don't worry about that grumpy dad. Screw him.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was the vast, vast majority. I mean, if it's under single-digit percentages of people that lost their stuff, it was a lot.
But it's funny to watch, right? And people don't have any self-awareness, so they do these things and they don't realize like how the rest of us are looking at them and kind of, that's a bit embarrassing.
People lose their radar when there's free stuff around.
Yeah, they do.
That's true. And I was very proud of my team because none of the team lost their cool. They handled it with kid gloves, explained, and tried to just diffuse the situation when it did happen.
So, George, what else have you got for us this morning?
So did you know, Gareth, that years, decades gone by maybe, police cars, when this obviously comes from a story out of America, when a police car stopped a consumer, they would get out of the car and they would touch the boot of the car. I don't know if you've ever noticed that, and it comes through in movies as well, but it's a real thing. They touch the boot of a car. And the reason they touch the boot of a car is because, first of all, to see that the boot was closed.
Oh.
But the more important reason was to leave fingerprints on as evidence on the car to show that the police officer was actually there.
Ah, okay. Why would they also check that the boot was closed? Is that a thing?
So check the boot was closed and then also startle the driver. Oh. So that was another thing. Don't know why they checked the boot was closed, but these were the three reasons they touched the boot of the car, mainly being the fingerprints.
I know why they checked if it was closed, because there might be a chance that Asian guy from The Hangover would come out and go, hello, motherfuckers, completely naked.
George, do they still do that?
So apparently it's still done just as a matter of course, but it's not necessary because of the police cars, dash cams, evidence is being created that the police officer was there. But the main reason was to prove that the police officer was there. There was fingerprints left on the car by the police officer.
Okay. Apparently they still do it. American cops now touch the back light, and they still do exactly that. That's what I just got a message from somebody about now. That's interesting.
Yeah. So I didn't know that. I didn't know it was a thing. And the reasons why. But there you go. There's the reasons why. And then we spoke previously about the dots on the edge of a windscreen. I don't know if you remember
Yes.
Talking about why those dots exist and that it's a reinforcement for the glass between the ceramic.
Correct.
I don't know if you've ever noticed lately that the tint has disappeared off the top of a windscreen. You don't really see it too much anymore.
Yeah, it was kind of very old. It reminds me of my aunt and uncle's pale yellow Peugeot from the 80s, where it was there to kind of shield your eyes while you were driving, a lovely brown hue around the edge of the glass.
Oh, that's great.
It's either brown, green, or blue. It's
very 70s. Yes. Like any brown kind of glass is very 70s.
Very 70s and a two-tone car with a brown roof and a cream body, which I see is coming back now in the Suzuki.
Oh, nice. Okay. That's what we needed. More of that.
The only reason that the tint existed was for UV rays for your eyes and to throw shade into the car so that the UV rays didn't mess up the upholstery too much. But it's largely gone away. And as a matter of fact, I didn't even notice it go away because only when I read the story did I realize, hold on a second, I actually have to go to my car to check if there's a piece of tint on the top of the windscreen.
Yeah,
I also haven't noticed. This is news to me this morning.
You guys know how old my car is, and it doesn't have that anymore.
Then it's been.
It's quite an old thing.
You see, they take these things away from us, George, and they don't even tell us. And then we figure it out years later, and we feel regret that we lost something that we didn't even know we'd lost. That's how it works.
So deprived.
Exactly.
And then second to last is, I don't know if you've noticed, but when you drive past some farms, I've only seen this very rarely in South Africa, but I think it's quite a thing in America, in that there are tires on top of tarpaulins.
Yeah.
You wonder what is under those tarpaulins. So there's a reason there are old car tires on those tarpaulins.
What?
Is because they create weight on top of grass. So they put their feed under the tarpaulins. And it gets the feed through winter, and that's the reason you see tires on top of tarpaulins.
Okay, I've seen that sometimes, even here. I think you see it in certain parts of the Free State when you drive through there, that they've got these tarpaulins of tires on top of them. So now we know what it is. Just by the way, I'm just going to show people a picture of what you mean. It sometimes helps to see these things if you're watching us on YouTube. And while we're on YouTube, don't forget to like and subscribe. I've also got a question for you about the tinting, because a friend of mine was – what's wrong, Leanne?
And like and subscribe.
Oh, I thought you were muttering things to yourself. I thought you totally lost it this morning. That's it. Sorry about that. you haven't lost your mind. So, George, I wanted to just ask you about the tinting thing again. A friend of mine has a car with, like, really dark windows. You can't see – anything in there. Is that allowed? Yeah. Is there a certain regulation that you're allowed to have windows of a certain tint? 90% is outlawed, but 50% is okay. Like, what is it?
So on the front windows, I believe, you have to have a maximum of a 30% tint. So 70% of the light needs to get through the side windows. Okay. Obviously, your front windscreen can't be tinted. That's just stupid.
No.
but through the side windows. And then I see the back windows of many cars from the manufacturer are actually slightly darker. So I don't know what the regulation is there and how much you can go, but I know the front windows, you have to have about 70% of the light come through.
Okay. All right. Useful info. That's the kind of thing that we would only learn if we spoke to you about it. All right, what else have you got?
Yeah. So very lastly, why is the driver's seat not in the middle of a car? And this is a very interesting answer.
Well, because you want your passenger to fit in as well. No?
Yeah.
True. Although, if the driver's seat was in the center of the car, you could have two passengers on either side, right? I guess. So the main reason is the steering column. If the steering column of the car were in the center, that means that the engine wouldn't fit into the engine bay in the front.
Oh.
Because the steering column would have to go through the center of the engine. So that's the main reason the car, the steering wheel's in the on the side of the car and not not in the center. If the engine's not there, the steering column can be wherever it needs to be.
Okay.
So I suppose in electric cars in the future, maybe we would have driver seats in the center.
That would be
but then you, when you get out, you have to go and squiggle your way across the seat just to get out the door.
That's also true. Very irritating. Or you could just have like a big, like a sofa in front instead of, you know, those very old cars. I mean, there are a couple of these, you know, those big American cars that they made in the 50s and 60s. They would often have like a sofa in the front. It wasn't two seats.
Yes.
And you'd sit in the middle of that, I suppose, if you could put the steering column. Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's nice.
One big long seat in the front. I mean, many cars used to come with that back in the day when they first made them. And the only reason the two seats were split really was because of the center column for the prop shaft that ran through the middle and the exhaust systems. So they raised those up into that little column that's right in the center.
Okay, well, we probably do without that but if you think about the, you know, single driver cars, like in Formula One, for example, they can obviously put you in the middle there, and yeah, you don't need a Formula One car with a passenger seat or the steering column on the side. So they've got the engine at the back, obviously, and all of that stuff, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, makes much more sense, actually. All right, George, as always, great to see you. Thank you very much for joining us this morning. Leanne, what is it with you and your alarms? Is that to wake you up? It's 8 o'clock.
When you've got ADHD, you know, you need something to tell you what to do every 10 minutes.
All right, everybody, have an awesome weekend. Be good. If you're not, take photos. We will see you on Monday at 6 a.m. bright and early. Be good. Cheers. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Cliffcentral.com.